Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments, where a 529 plan can help meet your college savings goals. Details at putnam.com. Produced in association with the University of Southern California.
1 year exactly, 12 long months. We learned today from the group that gets to decide that the recession started last December. So it took them this long to figure that out? From American Public Media, this is Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Shriners Hospitals for Children, providing treatment for orthopedic, burn, and spinal cord injuries at no cost to the families. More at ShrinersForKids.org. Coverage of Asia is supported by the Freeman Foundation.
From the Frank Stanton Studios in Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Today is Monday, the 1st of December. Great to have you here as the fallout from the financial crisis comes full circle. I'd like to take a moment now to introduce you to an economic organization you might not have heard of before, or to the best of your knowledge, heard from either, because the times there in the headlines are mercifully few and far between. The Business Cycle Dating Committee of the National Bureau of Economic Research are the folks I'm talking about here. They have become the de facto arbiters of when recessions begin and end. The committee issued a press release today that said, in part, economic activity peaked in December of 2007. In other words, everything's been downhill from there, and we have been in a recession ever since. If right about now you're wondering where they've been, join the club.
My initial reaction is, so what?
We called around today to get some opinions on how much today's announcement really means. Kate Barr is the executive director of the Nonprofits Assistance Fund.
Maybe if the word had been more openly used back in June or July, we could have gotten a jump start on some of the discussions about how to allocate resources, how to allocate budgets, how to allocate charitable giving.
In its defense, the Bureau says it likes to wait until all the data's in before it makes recessions official. One thing they don't look at, though, is the stock market, and probably it's just as well at that. Worries about manufacturing and retail drove everything lower today. Department store stocks like Macy's and Saks were down. Apparel chains like Abercrombie, same direction, even though early reports from the weekend were of higher than expected sales. Marketplace's Janet Babin reports now from North Carolina Public Radio.
Yes, the malls were crowded on Black Friday. The National Retail Federation says consumer spending was up 7.2% over last year, and the NRF predicts a modest gain of about 2% in holiday sales this year. But for most retail analysts, that forecast is about as realistic as Santa Claus. Adrian Tennant is with investment bank Friedman Billings Ramsey. She says the numbers are misleading.
It makes you think that everything's fine and, boy, we're off to a great start. But in reality, the margins on the product that they were selling, the gross margins are going to be terrible for the fourth quarter.
That's because the hottest selling items, things like GPS systems and winter clothes, came with hefty discounts. And after Black Friday, sales jumped off a cliff. Wachovia analyst John D. Morris says he doesn't think they'll rebound anytime soon.
We believe that it's going to be a tough time, at least on into the spring season.
The recession gets most of the blame, but also analysts say there are few must-have items, either in fashion or electronics, to drive us to stores. Cyber Monday today could bring a Black Friday-like surprise jump in sales, but Morris isn't counting on that, especially because, like retail stocks, a few retail websites were down today.
J. Crew has had difficulties today. The Gap's website is down. Not a good day to have that happen.
The company said the sites were down briefly because of unprecedented traffic, probably driven by the same tactics that pulled in most Black Friday shoppers, promotions. I'm Janet Babin for Marketplace.
Tomorrow's going to be a big day for the auto industry. November sales figures are due, and nobody is expecting anything other than simply gruesome. The big three do have something to distract them, though. Tomorrow is also the deadline for car makers to present their bailout plans to Congress, as Marketplace's Elisa Roth reports.
The heads of the Detroit Three put up a united front when they came to D.C. before Thanksgiving to ask for money. But Congress wasn't all that impressed by their show of solidarity. So it sounds like they may part ways when they come back this week. Eric Merkel's an auto analyst for the consulting firm Crowe Horwath. He says the three are standing by each other.
Their needs are different because the companies aren't the same. Ford has a much stronger cash position than the other two. So clearly, you know, some of the needs that GM and Chrysler have are going to be different than that of Ford Motor.
And Ford and GM are both public companies, so all kinds of investors' money is riding on their fates. On the other hand, Chrysler's privately held, so in a way, its fate is mostly its owner's problem. Presumably by now, the CEOs have come up with some kind of plan to present to Congress. The latest discussion is about getting rid of some more brands. Word on the street is GM's ready to lose Saab, among others, and Ford says it's contemplating options for Volvo. Dave Cole is head of the Center for Automotive Research, and he says this isn't necessarily what the carmakers want to do.
When your cash is gone, you're gone. And so first things first, and the first thing is to do whatever you can to survive. Under normal conditions of a market, I don't think Ford would even be considering the sale of Volvo.
So the fact Ford is considering it might be proof of how abnormal these conditions are. The trick will be for Ford and its friendly competitors to make that point to Congress. In New York, I'm Elisa Roth for Marketplace.
Here's a quick current events quiz. Who wrote the lead story in whichever newspaper you happen to read today? No worries if you don't know. A lot, maybe even most people, don't pay much attention to bylines. If they did, though, they'd see a good number of them belong to the Associated Press. Tomorrow, CNN is going to launch a plate getting into the wire service game itself. Marketplace's Stacey Vanek Smith has more.
The Associated Press is the largest news organization in the world. It's been providing content to newspapers for more than a century. But the Chicago Tribune, the LA Times, and others are planning to drop the service to cut costs. Subscribing to the AP can run hundreds of thousands of dollars a year. CNN's wire service could be a less expensive competitor, says Tom Rosensteel. He's director of the Pew Research Center's Project for Excellence in Journalism.
CNN is a significant brand, and it has bureaus around the world. They've already got this established institution generating material, and just redistributing and repurposing that material to newspapers could come at a relatively low cost.
Rosensteel says a wire service would let CNN make more money off of the written content it's already providing for its website, and he says it would broaden the cable network's reach.
For CNN, it could be a way of extending its brand, so you'd see that CNN byline on all these stories in newspapers and on websites, not just at CNN.
But the AP still has some big advantages, says newspaper analyst John Morton. He points out that the wire service is a nonprofit. It doesn't face the same cost pressures as other news organizations.
AP is not profit-seeking. Its competitors always have been. And that can make a big difference in the long run.
So could size. The AP has 3,000 journalists all over the world, and it's lowering its prices. The AP announced a cut in October that will save member newspapers about $30 million a year. I'm Stacey Vanek Smith for Marketplace.
Back-to-back speeches by Ben Bernanke and Henry Paulson did nothing at all to make investors feel better today. Paulson was asked, by the way, about the recession we're officially in.
You know, I'm not the decider there. The economists are.
Not the decider, he says. There were 7, 8, almost 9% drops on the major indices today. We will have the details when we do the numbers. No matter how long people linger in their morning showers or leave the tap running while they brush their teeth, consumers have a long way to go before they become the biggest water users in this economy. Which is not to say it's okay to waste it, but when it comes to water, factories and power plants in particular are huge consumers. Power plants use water mostly to keep things from getting too hot. Problem is, that kills a lot of fish. So tomorrow, the Supreme Court is going to take up a case that could force some expensive retrofits. From the Marketplace Sustainability Desk, Sam Eaton reports.
The case pits the New York environmental group Hudson Riverkeeper against Entergy Corp, owner of the Indian Point nuclear power plant on the Hudson River. But its ruling, says Riverkeeper President Alex Matheson, would affect more than 1,000 power plants and factories drawing water from U.S. lakes, rivers, and oceans.
These companies have gotten a free ride. They have profited enormously from not having to protect the environment, and now it's time to pay the piper.
Matheson says the costs to the environment have been huge. In the case of the Indian Point nuclear power plant, more than 1 billion small fish and eggs die every year after being sucked into its immense cooling system.
This one plant withdraws 2.4 billion gallons of water each day from the Hudson River. That is nearly twice as much as all of New York City consumes each day.
According to the Clean Water Act, industrial polluters are required to use the best technology available to avoid environmental damage. Newer power plants already do this, but Entergy says installing the same technology on an older plant, like Indian Point, built before the act, would cost $1.5 billion, more than enough to warrant an exception, says spokesman Jim Steets.
It simply doesn't make sense for us to be forced to install cooling towers when there's very little benefit to be gained.
Steed says estimates of fish kills are exaggerated. The Hudson Riverkeeper's Matheson says Entergy is the one with the fuzzy math. He says the cost of upgrading would be closer to $250 million, a small price to pay, he says, when it comes to protecting an entire ecosystem. I'm Sam Eaton for Marketplace.
Israel has tightened up its economic blockade of the Gaza Strip. Today, the Israeli Navy turned away a Libyan ship carrying 3,000 tons of humanitarian supplies. That blockade has been in place for almost a year and a half, despite occasional exceptions. Right now, there's not much that's getting across that border. Trade has been, for the most part, shut down, which makes launching a new high-tech startup with offices on either side of that border a dicey proposition. From the Marketplace Entrepreneurship Desk, Daniel Estrin reports.
They call their company the Global Host Operating System, or GHOST for short. And this is one GHOST with a mission.
Emails on the web, photo albums are on the web, it's time to have the whole computer on the web.
The alpha version is already up and running online. Zvi Schreiber, the CEO of GHOST, gave me a tour. He's an Israeli who grew up in England.
Okay, so to go to GHOST, I just opened the website. And what GHOST is doing now is recreating my desktop just how I left it. So it's actually opening up whichever programs I had open last time I logged in.
It's kind of surreal. You're looking at a web page, but it feels like you're staring at your desktop. And all of your files are right there on the web, which means that if your laptop gets stolen, you don't have to worry too much. Ask Zvi. It just happened to him last month.
Absolutely, got stolen from a car. When I went out and bought a replacement laptop, I just logged on to GHOST and carried on working. I didn't spend days trying to recreate stuff from backup.
Getting GHOST off the ground is quite a logistical challenge. Because this is no Silicon Valley. Here in the desert, near the Jordan Valley, workplace conditions are radically different.
Okay, we are in the road of the Dead Sea with the smell of the gas from the gas station and the animals. There are horses here and two dogs.
Rami Abdul Hadi is the marketing director at GHOST. He's with four other Palestinian employees. And they're meeting with GHOST's R&D director, who is Israeli.
So let's brainstorm a little bit about this. It's got a bunch of components.
The meeting place is a rundown coffee shop in a kind of no man's land between Jerusalem and Jericho.
For implementing this feature, we need some support from the server, from the user experience.
I agree. I think there are two levels here.
The idea behind this unlikely partnership came from CEO Zvi Schreiber. He wanted to help strengthen the Palestinian economy. So he did a Google search for Palestinian businessmen and eventually met with a few.
And I was very pleased to find that there are a lot of good engineers there, but very little industry. There's very little software industry there.
But this is where it gets complicated. Israelis are not allowed to visit Palestinian cities, and most Palestinians do not have the special permits to enter Israel. So GHOST maintains two separate offices, one in Ramallah and one in the Israeli city of Modi'in. They're just a few miles apart, but worlds away from each other, on different sides of a 27-foot-high concrete barrier.
You know, ghosts go through walls, and our company name is also an analogy to the fact that you can work through the walls and through the barriers.
Daily meetings take place by video conference. But when they need to meet face-to-face, the desert coffee shop is the easiest place to do business. The tense political situation here makes it seem like one of the last places in the world where you'd find a successful startup. But Abdul Hadi says that IT is a line of work that Palestinians can actually do with little hassle.
The high-tech require only emails, coding, using the internet. It does not require exporting and importing. That means that we don't need to cross checkpoints, ask for permissions to export and import products from outside Palestine, for example.
As GHOST prepares to launch its beta version, they're confident about its success. Because when you compare it to bringing about Mideast peace, creating a virtual computer doesn't seem so difficult. From the desert somewhere between Jerusalem and Jericho. This is Daniel Estrin for Marketplace.
If you want to check out Ghost for yourself, the link is on our website. It's marketplace.org. Coming up, a new city tries to find its feet in a wobbly economy.
I oppose cityhood because I think economically was not the time. We don't have enough tax base in the city.
But first, let's do the numbers. The Dow plunged 679 points today, hence the wah-wah trombone, 7.7% to 8,149. The Nasdaq fell 137 points, nearly 9%, finished at 1,398. The broader S&P 500 lopped off 80 points, 8.9%, closed at 816. Some of the biggest Dow components were among the biggest losers today. GE shares gave up more than 9%. General Motors skidded more than 12%. Alcoa crumpled more than 13%. Investors weren't buying the big names in retail, as we mentioned. Stock in Macy's and JCPenney dropped around 13%. Target shares lost more than 12% today. Even Walmart didn't escape those retail worries. Stock in the world's biggest retailer slipped more than 5%. As investors rushed back to the safe haven of government bonds, yields dropped to historic lows. The return on two-year treasuries was shaved below 1% for the first time ever. The yield on the 10-year T-note slipped to 2.75%. You're listening to Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Thomson Reuters, a source of intelligent information to businesses and professionals around the world. Thomson Reuters, knowledge to act. And by Clarkson Potter, publishers of The Splendid Table's How to Eat Supper, a holiday gift idea for people who love to eat, now available at splendidtable.org. Sustainability coverage supported by Calvert, mutual funds, college savings, and retirement investments in companies committed to responsible environmental, social, and governance practices. Calvert.com. Missed anything from our special financial crisis coverage? You can listen to the entire show or get our After the Bell podcast, a weekly download of the business stories you need to know. Just go to marketplace.org and click on the podcast link.
From the Marketplace Statebook, here's a look at events coming up tomorrow. In Philadelphia, governors from around the country meet with President-elect Obama. They'll discuss the toll the economic crisis is taking on their budgets. The curtain goes up on Havana's 30th International Festival of New Latin American Cinema, screening films through December 12th, and ceremonies in D.C. mark the opening of the United States Capitol Visitor Center. I'm Michelle Phillippe.
This is Marketplace from American Public Media. I'm Kai Rizdal. There is a certain understandable urge right now to close your eyes and just hope this whole recession thing goes away. Tune out the stock market, Henry Paulson, me, if you like, though I'd prefer you don't. But Duke University economist Dan Ariely has a theory that the ignorance is bliss mentality actually is kind of helpful for us and for the economy. Dan, it's great to have you back.
Same here.
All right, I have to ask you something. So I opened my retirement account statement not too long ago. I know that was a mistake. But when I saw how much I had lost, and I can't possibly be alone in this, my first inclination was to cut back on almost all discretionary spending I have.
Yeah, so some people have this this desire or this tendency, and it makes a lot of sense for people who are have financial constraints, right? If you don't have enough money to live as you are, you should cut. But interestingly enough, I got a lot of email from people who had the opposite sentiment. Now, think about it. How could somebody have the opposite sentiment?
Yeah.
Well, what happened is that you probably don't want to share with us how much money you lost recently, but
I'll tell you exactly. It's 40-something percent out of my account. I mean, it's a lot of money.
Okay. So now think about something. And this was one of my students who wrote me initially. He said, look, I just lost $40,000 yesterday. He said, and I deprived myself over the last year. I wanted to buy a new bicycle. I wanted to change my car. I didn't do all of those things and I saved. And now I see that all of the money is gone. How much better would I have been if I never thought about the sentiment of saving and I would just spend all the money mm-hmm. and increase my spending? So ironically, when you have nothing to use your money for, you can actually think about the fact that it might actually increase spending rather than decrease it.
But what we're seeing now, actually, is quite the opposite, right? People are losing a lot of money in the stock market, and we're seeing consumer spending being cut way back.
There's a question of what's the general tendency and what are the trends within it. And I think we will see both of those things. So when the Christmas season is coming up, I think a lot of people will just spend less. But there will be people who would actually think about, what will I do with this bonus I get? I have nothing to do with it. Putting it in the bank is not very helpful. Putting it in the stock market is definitely not something I want to do. So I'll spend it.
Let me ask you what this does to the larger economy then. If some people might actually spend more, but probably the great majority of people won't, what does that do? What does that tell us?
Well, then we get into a self-fulfilling prophecy and escalation of bad things. The biggest way to get into a recession is for everybody to believe that there is a recession. And by the process of doing it, we would all spend 10% less, 5% less, have less money, people would lose their job, and it was completely escalating. In fact, the whole thing about recession is mostly about a social coordination game. If we could all agree that saving now is not the right strategy and we should trust ourselves and we should all build together and pull together, the outcome would be much better than if we didn't.
All right, well, let me ask you this then. So I saw my retirement savings account and I decided, this actually happened, I decided not to buy a fancy new camera that I've really been wanting to buy for a number of months now. Am I hurting the economy?
First of all, yes. But there's also a good chance that you're hurting yourself too much. The question, are you trading off a couple of years of good, vivid, high-quality, multi-megapixel memory for something that might have an effect for you somewhere in 40 years down the line? Might not be the right trade-off to do. But nevertheless, it's hard to do because you just lost money and it's painful.
So clearly, I have to get you on the phone with my wife and tell her it's okay, right?
That's right. I actually am going to create an automated service that give notes to people.
That's right. Dan Ariely teaches behavioral economics at Duke University. His book on exactly that topic is called Predictably Irrational. Dan, thanks a lot.
My pleasure, as always.
A year into the recession, this much is clear. No matter where you live, the slowdown either already has or soon will hit a neighborhood near you. Over the next couple of months, in a series we're calling Close to Home, we're going to take you to two very different communities to see how the slowdown is playing out. The Temecula Valley, here in Southern California, is a fast-growing suburb out in the desert, northeast of San Diego. Edina, Minnesota, is a wealthier suburb near Minneapolis, Minnesota. But we begin today in the Temecula Valley, in the newly incorporated town of Wildomar. From KPCC, Stephen Cuevas has this first story about what it's like trying to kickstart a brand new city in a bad economy.
Who needs a key to the city if you've got a key to the bell tower?
We're unlocking the chain, which holds the bell from being rung.
The mayor of Wildomar, Bob Cashman, helped restore the old cast iron bell. It first tolled more than 100 years ago. That's right. This new town is actually kind of old.
It was founded by a group of three people. They attracted farmers from Minnesota, Iowa. They built a hotel just to help relocate people from the Midwest to Wildomar.
Now a new wave of settlers has flooded the Temecula Valley from other parts of Southern California. These mostly white, middle-class migrants came in search of lush open space and affordable housing. Guys like the mayor. And a new freeway made it possible to commute to jobs in San Diego and other business centers in about an hour. But there was a problem.
Our voice was scarcely heard among the larger areas.
Wildomar's population doubled in 10 years to 27,000. But planning decisions were made by the county. Neighboring cities were eager to get their own claws into Wildomar's miles of unincorporated horse trails and housing tracks. Time to sound the alarm. Councilwoman Cheryl Ade helped spur the quest for cityhood. Supporters believed Wildomar would lose its identity if the county continued to make its decisions. So last summer, Wildomar voters decided to go it alone.
The county was not looking at us as a whole community because they didn't have to.
They do now. Wildomar cut the county purse strings and is paying for all the basic services. Police and fire, city staff.
Road maintenance, that's another large expenditure.
And what a time to take over your own checkbook. In the midst of a local and now a global recession, new development in Wildomar is at a standstill. Walmart pulled out, and there are about 700 homes in some stage of foreclosure. A month before it signs off on its first budget, there's news that tax revenue is off by at least 10%. It's kind of an I-told-you-so moment for cityhood opponents like Joe McCabe.
We're a small area, and there's lots of people have grandiose ideas.
McCabe is a retired aerospace engineer. I caught up with him in the foyer of Wildomar City Hall, actually a rented space behind Ace Hardware.
I oppose cityhood because I think economically was not the time. We don't have enough tax base in the city. What I saw in economics, I saw that things were going this way.
Thumbs down.
Not that way.
Thumbs up. Cityhood cheerleaders are not immune to the grim economic news, but there are few, if any, regrets over the decision to cut the cord. The Maiden City Council is watching its projected $13 million budget. At its last meeting, there was even debate over splurging on a regional parade. The price tag? About $750.
I would just ask for your consideration not to spend $750. Waste of taxpayers' money.
If we're going to do a float, it has to look professional. I mean, we can't be cheesy little Wildomar and that coming through. So if you're going
a debate over a minor expense, watching every dollar is how this new city aims to get through the tough times. Again, Mayor Bob Cashman.
But it is okay because we don't have to lay people off. We can just hire the amount that are needed for our city because we're a startup city. So that's actually to our advantage.
A new upstart city like Wildomar may have its advantages, but like cities big and small these days, its fiscal survival largely depends on a major rebound in building and buying. When that happens, maybe the city will shell out for a parade of its own. In Wildomar, I'm Stephen Cuevas for Marketplace.
Tomorrow on Close to Home, we'll visit Edina, Minnesota to see how affluent suburbs are coping with fallout from the financial crisis.
Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments, managing nearly $8 billion in municipal bond assets. Details at putnam.com. Additional support from the University of Southern California's Annenberg School for Communication.
This final note, along with the observation that oil dropped another $5 today. As crude's been sliding, I'm sure you've noticed gas is a whole lot cheaper, too. Pump prices are down about 55% or so since the middle of the summer. Wholesale, though, they're off almost 70%. Think that one through, and you're left with this. According to the folks at the Oil Price Information Service who track these kinds of things, and USA Today, which printed the story this morning, retailers are actually making more money with gas on the way down than they did at the pump with it on the way up. And we are on the way out. That is Marketplace from American Public Media on this Monday. Today, the Dow shaved off 679 points, 7.7%. The NASDAQ shuffled down 137 points, almost 9%. The S&P 500 tanked 80 points, 8.9% there. Our producers include Caitlin Carroll, Millie Jefferson, Megan Larson, and Fiona Ng. Marketplace was created by Jim Russell. Coming up next time on the program, recession or no, one suburb meets the economy with relentless optimism.
Our motto is, or mantra, if you will, is really we're not participating in any slowdown, any recession or anything. We chose not to participate, and we mean it.
I'm Kai Rizdahl. Hope you can join us for that tomorrow.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.